You're listening to the Red Diamond Courier, an Elder Scrolls podcast. Here are your hosts, Bob Chichinski and Dog Bark 24.
Welcome everyone to episode 110 of the Red Diamond Courier. I am here with you as always, Bob Chichinski, with my good friend Dog Bark 24. How you doing this week, my dude?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good as well. Excited to be here as always. And this week we're going to be covering one of our classic dungeon guide episodes. It's been a while since we did one, so we're excited to bring back, you know, this classic segment. And this time we're talking about the Scalebreaker Dungeon DLC. So this is the DLC that came out in the Elsewhere, Year of the Dragon kind of thing. And it holds the infamous Lair of Marsalok and Moongrave Fane. Like, I'd say they're both infamous, honestly. So, yeah. Pretty excited, Dogdra. What do you think about these? Do you have anything just off the top to go on a dungeon guide episode or anything?
I mean, well, it's been a while since your last dungeon guide, because this dungeon DLC definitely wasn't our favorite when it first came out. And I was willing to do pretty much literally anything else than do show notes on these dungeons for several months. So several months later, though, they're done.
You could definitely say we may have had it on the back burner for a little bit. But here we are. We're ready to tackle them. And it's going to be a stroll in the park, just like most of Lair of Marsalok is. You're just walking.
Yeah, you're walking, and you're walking, and you're walking.
And we're walking. Okay,
and you're still walking.
All right, so before we get into all that, of course, we do have some news this week. Dogged, my dude, tell them the freaking exciting news before I just explode with excitement.
All right, the exciting news in ESO. Well, obviously, you're talking about the Explorer Celebration that's going on between March 2nd and March 7th, right? With a double experience, double gold, and resource nodes, right?
Okay, to be fair, that is extremely exciting as well. I'm over here making 10,000 gold per character. I mean, by the time you guys hear this, it probably have ended. Maybe not. You never know. But I hope you guys all took advantage of it, because just doing 5 characters a day, pretty casually, making a cool 50,000 a day. I'm just chilling. It's fantastic. I should be doing more, but, you know, 5 is enough for right now.
If that's not it, maybe it's that there's, you know, Zahn's arm pack is in the shop for March 2nd and March 9th. And I know you love Zahn. You love that monster set. So maybe you want to have that monster head style page and maybe some weapons. Is that it? Is that the amazing thing you're looking for?
Well, I must say, I gotta pull up ESO right now and go check that out, because it's a limited time thing that I didn't even know was there. And I do love the Zahn's arm pack, but I think there's got to be something even more exciting than that, honestly, on this docket.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now. All right, you're talking about the ESO Vegas live event on April 12th and April 13th.
That's it, man. You nailed it right on the head. My favorite place in the freaking whole NA, bro. Vegas and ESO. Just like 2020, it's ESO Vegas number 2. I mean, we started our show. Uploaded the first episode and then drove out to Vegas for the event that day. So it's a full circle thing for us, man. I'm super excited. Maybe, just maybe, I could talk Dogged into somehow going.
Yeah, maybe. You know, if it was up to me, you know, do I want to go? Of course I want to go, but am I able to go? That's the You know, that's a good question.
I'm sure that that is probably the situation for like 99% of the ESO fam, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's definitely not an easy thing. I'm super lucky to be, you know, within a three and a half hour drive of Vegas. And it's a place we go to often, so we're pretty, you know, savvy on how to get good deals and things around there. So I'm super stoked and super lucky and super fortunate that they did it in Vegas again. I was like, really like, I don't know if they'll do Vegas again two times in a row. Maybe they'll do somewhere like, you know, on the East Coast. They are, you know, centered over there on the East Coast. But hey, man. There's no better place to hold a conference than Vegas. There's, you know, so much space out there and all kinds of, it's just fun stuff. So there you go. And the first one was pretty awesome, I must say. So this one's a 2-day event, dog.
Yeah, it is a 2-day event. That's kind of crazy.
So, I mean, did you read up about it? Like, what are we going to get to do, man? Are we just going to be, like, staring at people, or are we going to get hands-on with Necron?
Yeah, I think they're going to have, like, some kiosks, or... are they kiosks? I don't know what they're called, but... yeah, they're going to have some, like, Necron things going on. They're also obviously going to do the chapter preview live stream there. That's, like, the big thing. And then there's also going to be like specific guest panels and activities that you can do in Vegas, as well as there's going to be some stuff that you can do through digital outlets that they're going to have. So even if you can't make it, they're still going to be doing stuff for you too. So that's cool.
Yeah. So there you go, guys. We really hope that you all signed up. By the time you hear this, I mean, still go sign up if you want to go. I don't know if you'll really have a chance here. I'm sure a million people have signed up by now. Even people who are probably not even going to go but just signed up. I don't blame them. But I'm excited. Super excited. I think it's going to be a big area this time because on the registration thing, it was like, are you going to bring a guest? And I was like, well, I mean... oh, you always check plus one, right? So I was like, well, yeah, check plus one. And so I think that's going to be a bigger area so they could get more people in. So, yeah, they haven't announced where it's all going to be held yet. They haven't sent out confirmation emails to anyone as far as I know. We are not, we haven't been contacted by them to do anything cool or anything. But y'all should, you know, hop on Twitter and just talk about how you want to see a live Red Diamond Corey episode in Vegas. I'm just saying, we'll do it. I'll get Dogged out there.
Yeah.
See, Dog, you get him on stage, he's freaking out already just thinking about it.
Yeah, definitely freaking out, yeah.
All right, so let's get Dog to stop freaking out and let's move. Well, are we done with the news here, Dog?
There's one more thing that's in the Crown Store. Starting March 16th, it's going to be the Adarine Fargrave Drag Sealer Assistant. It's going to be available, well, I already said that, March 16th. It's a new Decon Assistant, and originally I read it as a Fargrave Drug Sealer, and was super confused and super curious on what kind of assistant they were adding. I was like, huh, a drug stealer, huh?
He's like, all right, we got some skooma, we got some, I don't know, other drugs in Elder Scrolls that I'm apparently unfamiliar with. That's hilarious, though, and I guess cool. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they do this where now they're just, like, releasing just different, you know, assistants of the same version. I'm like, that's, it is cool, but let's just keep making new assistants, in my opinion. Like, I like the whole concept behind them.
Like I said, it was a Jamora, so I really thought it was like a drug dealer. So I was like, huh, I wonder what that's gonna be like, but no.
Not this time, Dog. You have to get your drugs elsewhere. Get it?
Yeah. In elsewhere?
Skooma. All right, so let's talk about some Cyrodiil. Cyrodiil's been popping off lately. It's been, I haven't been on PC in a while, to be fair, so I don't really know how it is actually it physically in Cyrodiil. But in Xbox, it has been popping off, and I just got the scores on PlayStation. They're bonkers for NA, so I'm pretty sure it's popping off. Yeah, let's just get it started right off the bat. We got Greyhost scores as always. PC NA, there's only 5 days left. So this is a reminder to everyone, including myself, that if you want Transmute Crystals, it's time to get in there. Score your 25k AP in the campaign. Super easy. You know, actually, one strategy that I've been doing, I just take my PvE tunes DPS in there, like my Sork, you know, super survivable. Just go run around some resources and flip them. You could kill the ads so easily because you're on a PvE tune. And, you know, you just got to hope that no one runs up to you and demolishes you in 2 seconds because you're on a PvE tune.
I mean, that might be a bit trickier on PC because, you know, add-ons be like, oh, hey, someone just flagged this farm. Everyone go there.
So. Oh, yeah, you're right. That's true. That's very fair. So, my rambling aside, of course, right off the bat, we've got DC in the lead at 81k, scoring it up. Ebonheart Pact right behind him, 75.6k. And then right behind them, like in capital and quotation marks, is the Almighty Dominion at 75.5k. So, yeah. That is very close. Anyone could get second for sure. Maybe they could creep up on DC, but it would be like pretty tough, I think, at this point. DC's got a pretty solid little lead there. On the EU side of things, Ebonheart Pact is up top with 90k, and they're just demolishing this month for sure. Have a huge lead on Daggerfall Covenant, 68k behind them. And the Almighty Dominion in last, 67k. They're right there, though. Could still get up to second. So, yeah. That's for the PC side of things. What about Xbox, dog?
Alright, for Xbox NA, DC won the last campaign. So, that was pretty good. And then there's 20 days left in all of these console campaigns that reset. We have, in first, DC in the lead with 32k. And then EP in second, shortly behind with 31k, and AD trailing a little bit of ways off with 27k. And then for Xbox EU, unfortunately, you know, EP won last campaign by like a lot. Like it was kind of embarrassing, but that happened. But, and right now we have, again, DC in the lead, right, with 33k. EP in second with 30k, and AD in last with 20.7k. So, AD trailing off behind in both Xbox campaigns, with both DC in the lead in both.
Is that what you've decided now? Instead of singing, you're just going to like very seriously say that DC is in the lead? DC in the lead.
Yeah, yeah, because it's very serious.
Okay.
And singing is your thing, so I have to have my own thing, right?
There you go. You finally figured it out after 110 episodes.
Exactly.
There you go, man. That's good. It's good. You're learning. But see? I'm telling you, we're podcast professionals, man. Get us on stage. Oh, man. All right. So, PlayStation, once again, gonna be the same as Xbox. 20 days left. DC won the last campaign. You know, I thought about singing it, but you know, it's if they're in the lead, and right now they're not, so I can't sing about it. But they did win the last one, so that's cool. However, right now, currently, we have a freaking awesome just battle going on here in PlayStation NA Greyhost. Almighty Dominion's leading. That possibly could change by the time I'm speaking this sentence. I mean, I just got scores like 20 minutes ago. And AD's in the lead at 30,575. Just, I mean, like 30 points behind them is Daggerfall Covenant, 30,547. And just about, you know, 50 points behind that is Ebonheart Pact. So, 30,493. So you could literally throw a blanket over all three factions. It's within 100 points overall. I mean, that's about as good as it gets right there. And on EU, it looks like Elmer Dominion is starting to pull away. They also won the last campaign, so they're starting to flex their muscles over there. AD's leading at 37k. Daggerfall Covenant behind him at 24k, and Ebonheart Pact bringing up the caboose at 22k. So there you go. It's looking like a pretty good week for the Covenant. AD's leading both on PlayStation. Ebonheart Pact still got one though, PC EU. So there you go. Everyone's pretty good parity throughout all the gray hosts. All right, dogged. So we have talked about how excited we are for Vegas. We've talked about all the other news. We've talked about some PvP. So let's get into these dungeons, man. Dungeon guide episode. You know, I don't even know how many of these we've done, but we've done plenty, and here we are at both of our absolute number one favorite dungeon, for sure, of all time, Lair of Marsalok, spelled with two A's in Marsalok, just to really throw you off.
Yeah, I think.
Marsalok. Well, let's see. I'm on the game. By the way, in the Zahn pack, there is no sword, and I don't, like, there's a great sword, but there's no normal sword, and I don't understand why they do that weird stuff sometimes. Like, just do it for one of each weapon. Like, why does it need to not be one of each weapon? It's,
Does it have an axe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so what, they only do one-handed?
I think that's how they do it, yeah. Except for maybe dagger. They might do a dagger.
Oh, boy. Whatever. All right, so, yes, you spelled it absolutely correct. It's Marsalok.
Yeah. Google kept telling me I was spelling it wrong. I was like, I don't think so, Google.
Yeah, so. Google does not like when I text ESO. It's like, Tamriel guy, are you on drugs?
Probably.
Maybe I am. I got the Fargrave drug dealer over here.
Yeah. No, not the drug dealer. The drugs dealer.
The drugs dealer, yes. Yeah. He's got options.
He deals all the drugs.
Yeah, not just one. That's good. You have to diversify, you know. All right, so all joking aside, Lair of Marsalok, you unlock it at level 45 with all the other DLC dungeons. Of course, that's just for normal until you... Well, is it just for normal? I mean, I guess you could do it. You're not going to enjoy it at that point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, you have, like, to be champion, right? Activity finder.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Portal. Then... Right. And then... The location for it is one of my favorite places, Eastern Grotwood. And, you know, that's because the story behind it is the dragon is down there somewhere and he's, like, poisoning the tree. I don't know. Go do the dungeon. You'll like the story. It does involve some key people. Are we going to talk about that later? Should I drone on about it right now?
I mean, you can talk about it now. I mean,
yeah, so if you guys love Selene's Web and the story and you thought that was interesting, then you'll like Lair of Marsalok, because homegirl Celine is in there. It's like the follow-up story. And that's pretty cool. That was always like the most cool, intriguing part of the dungeon for me.
Yeah, I don't remember much about that story. So,
I mean, I don't remember much about the story itself, but I just like the fact that they like brought, you know, they like finished the story or like, you know, added more to it, I guess. Something that was kind of left like unsaid before in the first dungeon because you leave in such a weird way.
Oh, yeah, because like the one guy captures him and you're like, wait, are we the bad guys? And yeah, we were kind of the bad guys.
Yeah, and that's like a weird feeling at the end of that dungeon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool with the story. As we said, it goes with the Year of the Dragon stuff. So obviously, you're fighting a dragon. It is interesting and also to be said that you fight the dragon in like different like phases. Like, you fight him, I think, 3 times overall, right, dog?
Yeah, you fight him a lot.
Yeah, so that's, like, I think that's the only dungeon that you, like, fight the end boss, like, over and over throughout it, right?
I mean, Grey Fang is kind of like that, too.
Okay, yeah, you're right. So, they're like, a couple, you know, power couple. They do their weirdo last boss through the old dungeon things together, I guess.
Yeah. It's not the same as definitely as Marslock, but yeah.
Yeah, Marslock's definitely one of a kind like that. But I remember that they were, you know, well, Mike Finnegan specifically, he was the dungeon lead at that point. Now he's like lead encounter designer, whatever. Something awesome. I don't know. He's cool. He was saying that when they were creating a dungeon with a dragon, like, as the end boss, it was like, okay, well, you're not just going to, like, fight a dungeon with four people, or fight a dragon with four people and just be able to take it down in, like, one encounter, you know? That would be, you know, lore-breaking and just not even realistic in the first place. Especially when you're doing a trial with 12 people fighting a dragon over there and, you know, Sunspire, so they had to really, like, think how to, like, create that. So that's why they added in the, like, separate fights. So you're, like, slowly weakening the dragon. So by the time you get to it at the last, like, true boss fight, it's already in, like, a weaker state. So theoretically, your group could be able to take it down.
Yeah. I want to say it's, like, at, like, 50% or something, but...
Yeah, but its number is still ridiculous with health.
Yeah, it still has a lot of health, but yeah.
Yes, it does. So, we've got a few dangerous enemies here to go over before we get in the bosses. The first of which is going to be the Azure Blight Lurcher. And yeah, I'm talking lurchers. They're not as bad as... What are they, the ocean lurchers and the werewolf dungeon that just, like, tidal wave you into oblivion?
Oh, March of Sacrifices? Yeah. Tidal wave is awesome. Especially when you're not...
Yeah, exactly. So, they're not that bad, I think, but they will start one-shotting players. Have a nasty AoE, too, that they do, so... Don't stand in the stupid. Please, for the love of God. Tank, make sure they grab the lurcher. And DPS, you always want to rip them down first, for sure. Then we have the Azure Blight Frost Mage. And yes, Azure Blight's going to be a theme. So get ready for that. These Frost Mages, they will spawn Frost Atronox and deal a bunch of AoE damage. You only need to break its shield for it to go away, the Frost Mage. So it's got this shield, and just boom, 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 damage it, and then he's just going to be like, all right, I'm not fighting anymore. Right? That's what they do.
Yeah, they kind of just walk away.
They're possessed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Then you have the Azure Blight Corruptor. And similar to the Frost Mage, you just need to break their shield, although it's, you know, easier said than done, especially on Veteran. Tanks should lose aggro and face away from the group because he has a cleave that will kill the DPS and the healers, pretty much everyone who's not a tank. So, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you read those notes perfectly. And apparently I did a typo in those notes where I said tank should lose aggro instead of tank should hold aggro.
Well, there you go, man. Classic Ron Burgundy. What can I say?
Yeah.
You put it in front of me and I will read it, man. So tanks should hold aggro of the guy, clearly, most likely. Because if you don't, then he's going to start killing everyone with his cleaves.
Yeah. Classic two big-hander wielders are scary vibes.
Very scary. And, yeah, there you go. Don't listen to Dog and lose aggro. Or apparently me. So, Dogged, we are about knee-deep into Lair Marcelok now, and it's a thick puddle that we're wading into. So you want to get started on some of these bosses?
Yeah, so first boss fight, right? We have Selene's Claws, Selene's Fangs, and of course, Selene herself. Right? So,
yes, I mean,
don't worry, you only have to fight with them one at a time.
It's a traditional first boss fight with three bosses.
Nah, there's only one boss, followed by another boss, followed by, you know, a person that likes to travel around a lot.
Yeah, I remember this one on Veteran for the first time. We're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. So first off, you know, the tank should hold the boss in the middle of the room and turn it away from the group at all times because, well, Selene's Claws and Selene's Fangs, they both have huge conal AoE attacks, cleave attacks, all kinds of bad stuff. So, yeah. But as far as Selene's mechanics go, Selene will target a player with a cone AoE, and this will follow you around. So don't run around and share the damage with your friends. Instead, just stand still, block, and heal through the damage. Because, you know, this is the one case where sharing is not caring. So,
the one case, huh?
The one case where sharing is not caring. Because, you know, I mean, unless if you like sharing damage and you like, and you, your friends like to share the damage.
No, they like to yell at me when I share the damage.
Yeah.
Yes, and you're included in that.
Yeah. Next up, Selene will put AoEs under players' feet, and you can just sidestep out of them if you're fast enough, or you can block and you will take less damage. Either way, you'll be thrown into the air and you have to break free. So as long as you sidestep, you won't be thrown in the air, so try to sidestep, but otherwise you might be thrown into the air, and that's never good. And lastly, this is Selene's scariest mechanic, and Selene will teleport into different places of the room randomly, mainly to be in the most convenient spot or most inconvenient spot as possible, and we do classic mage rapid fire projectiles at players, and that needs to be interrupted, so having crushing shock will be beneficial to your survival, or, you know, just run really fast.
Yeah, run really fast. Have the typical spread the group out throughout the room. But Crushing Shock is a nice one to have in your back pocket, no doubt.
Yeah. So the first one that you'll fight is, I think, Selene's Claws, which is the bear. And as usual, you know, boss has heavy attack. The tank needs to block or dodge roll if you are not the tank. So make sure to block or dodge roll the heavy attack. And the bear will have an AoE cone cleave attack that the tank needs to block and other people need to not stand in because AoE cleaves one-shot you if you're not the tank. And then lastly, Selene's Fangs, aka Spider. Oh, we're here. When you kill the bear, the spider will spawn. So, there's that. Be sure to stand away from the center when the spider stands in, because the spider will get a free heavy attack on the closest person in the area. If you're the tank and have very quick reflexes and a bit of RNG on your side, he can taunt before a heavy attack goes off, but definitely needs to be sure that he's holding block when the bear goes down. And the spider's heavy attack needs to be blocked by the tank or dodge rolled by anybody else. So if the spider is charging at a DPS or healer, just, you know, dodge roll backwards. And then lastly, small spiders will spawn in, and the tank will need to pull them into the group so the DPS can focus them and still do damage to the boss. The longer the fight goes on, the more these will spawn, so try to kill them quickly while still damaging the boss. But that's going to wrap up the Selene fight. The first fight.
The fight of the animals.
Of Selene's animals.
Yeah, well, she's mad. We did trap her with a weirdo mage and everything.
We did.
He's like, sick 'em bear. Okay, so next one, we have the Azure Blight Lurcher. And this is the first step to weaken big boy Marsalok. So you will need to kill this boss 3 times before the fight is finished. Does that sound fun or what? And during that, Marsalok will do a Dragon Line aerial assault strike, reminiscent of a Sunspire. Spoiler alert, don't stand in it. Take my word for it, or don't. Find out the hard way. The boss also cannot touch this AoE, or it will be enraged. So when the tank sees this line, start pulling the boss away from it. So we're talking big stripe of line across the ground that he's going to spit fire on, do something. Don't let the lurcher be there. Believe us, you will not like it. So the lurcher has a heavy attack that the tank needs to block. And if it's enraged, you may have to dodge roll it because it's pretty freaking nasty. So if it gets enraged, just keep that in mind. You do have that as an option. Just watch out for the heavy attacks and roll dodge if needed. There are also several adds to deal with imps, stranglers, and spriggans. The tank should chain these in and control them while maintaining a taunt on the boss. Now, you gotta be sure to kill them as they spawn, or you will be overrun by an angry mob of forest creatures.
Yeah, no one wants to be hunted by Al Dragon's mafia. So, get it? Instead of Al Capone, it's Al Dragon.
Oh my god. You thought about that one.
Hey, I thought about it while at work, alright.
Well, there you go. That's good.
Because I wanted to do one, and I was like, man, I don't really have a good pun. So, but at work one day, I was like, how'd you go?
It's perfect. So, yes. Now, every time you do Lair of Marsalok, you can be afraid of Al Dragon and his forest creature mafia.
Yep.
So, the lurcher, to wrap it all up, is going to drop AoEs on everyone. Just dropping them. That will deal a decent amount of damage and will drain your resources. So, if you drag him through it, it may also enrage the boss. Possibly. We think it does. So, be sure to keep him out of there. Which is also just a good idea in general, because you don't want your tank in there in the first place.
Yeah. Alright, the next boss fight is the Azure Blight Cancroid. This boss will spawn in lurchers that you have to kill in order to proceed the fight. The lurcher will stomp and drop a hard to see blue circle on the ground that you have to stay out of at all times and fight on the edge of at all times. This puts... if you stay inside of the circle, it'll put a dot on you, and it'll stay until the lurcher is dead. So, you do not want to stand in it for very long. and preferably not at all. The lurcher will need to be faced away from the group if possible because of its small conal AoE rock throw attack. And it has a heavy attack that needs to be blocked or dodge rolled. And its side attacks are also pretty hard. Its side attacks also hit pretty hard and apply a dot on you too. So they just do a lot more damage compared to the other Azure Blight lurchers that you were fighting before. And the big mechanic here is when the lurcher dies, it will drop a seed on the ground and instantly spawn another lurcher that the tank will need to quickly grab with taunt. The seed needs to be synergized, run into the circle around the tree, and synergize again to activate it. And now you can finally start doing damage to the boss, but only for like 15 seconds before you have to repeat this whole process. And be sure to save your ultimates for this phase and have the tank puncture the tree so, you know, you do more damage. And bring over the lurcher into the tree so you do some damage to the lurcher as well. With AoEs and stuff.
And stuff.
Yeah, but wait, there's more because there's more. The tree will fire conal AoEs at the group that needs to be avoided. This is like after you kill the first one. And after you kill the first one, stranglers will spawn. And the longer the fight goes on, more will spawn. So you should definitely kill any that you see and may have a, and you may need to have a DPS run around and kill stranglers if they get to be in ridiculous amounts. They also shoot from the other side of the room, so that's great. You know, just being able to shoot from a mile away. And this fight is very much kind of a DPS test or a heal test or both. So that fight is definitely an interesting fight. Yeah, it's an interesting fight.
Yeah, the tree, it's like the worst one. I hate that fight.
But it's interesting.
Yeah, but I get distracted because you have me looking at the crown store now. And apparently there's this Maurimer furnishing pack. It only has 3 days left. And yeah, it's been out for a little while, I know, but I never actually looked at it. And they have a Maurimer cook fire in there that's an actual crafting station. And it's like a like dragon like holding the pot down over the cook fire. And honestly, it's maybe the sickest thing I've ever seen. I may just spend 4,000 crowns just so I get that.
That's kind of insane.
I don't know, man. You're right, though. I don't really cook at my house ever. I'm always just cooking on the go.
Yeah. Which is why it's insane. Plus, you already have a nice cook fire at your house.
I did get an Aetherial well a bit ago. They were on sale.
That would be smart.
Yeah, I have one for the house. All right, so anyways, my rambling aside, let's move on. If you thought we were on to the next dungeon, you're wrong. We still got more. We're on part one of Marsalok, the fourth boss fight. So you got to bring big bad boy Marsalok down to 50% in this fight. That sentence was just complicated for me for some reason, but that's what you got to do. You got to get him down from probably whatever 70 or something. So this time, Selene is helping us, but you have to defend her from Horvers that are going to try and stun her while she's helping. Now, you only need to run on top of them to make them explode. Was that always like that, Dong?
Yeah, it was always like that.
Oh, we just thought we had to DPS them down?
Yeah, at first. And then I think Graham figured out that you could just, like, walk through them.
Hmm. So, the tank can also pull them easily, or the healer can just run through them while the DPS are damaging. The one of the things that Marcellus does is a big ol' foos rodaw right in your face, yelled out, and you're gonna need to block this when you hear him doing it, or you're gonna get thrown back. So just throw up a block. Make sure you wait for the hit, because like the timing with the voice thing, it like takes a second. And yeah, there's also an indicator on the screen that is way more reliable than the audio cue, which, like I said, is just like, I don't know about all that. But yeah,
it's kind of awkward when you get Fushur Da and then the dragon yells out Fushur Da afterward.
Yeah, you're like, or you're blocking, and then you're like, okay, I'm good, and then you get thrown back. You're like, okay. Yeah. So there are also AoEs all over the place, you know, because why not? That's just one way to liven up the situation. And there are also lurchers that the tank needs to taunt and pull them into the stranglers. The DPS can damage both at the same time. What a smart freaking thing. Now, along with any other trash mobs out there, that's where you're just going to want to pull them. Pull lurchers, pull them to the beetles, the horrors, pull them the trash mobs. Because there are archers, etc. This time, lurchers are not the priority. The stranglers are. Now, the stranglers, they're the worst part of this fight. And most fights they're in, they're just annoying. In this case, stranglers will spawn in specific little areas that need to be killed. Like, I'm talking, they're going to spawn in this little area and DPS need to turn and burn. Celine is over there chilling on the side, like waving her arms or something. I don't know. She's summoning spiders that stranglers are going to try to kill to prevent progression from happening. Because those spiders, like, the only thing that damages Marcellus, they just bug him enough to make him come down for a little bit. So, they do heavy damage to players, so the tank can't just go and taunt them. So, the stranglers, they do heavy damage, so the tank can't just go taunt them. You gotta burn them down. Now, after a random number of spiders, who even knows, make it to Selene, the dragon falls out of the sky, and you get about 15 seconds where you can actually do damage. At 65% and 55%, the dragon will stop the clock and go back to flying, because, you know, that's what they do.
Yeah, why not, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, that's all those mechanics. And when this fight came out, you know, they also decided to nerf AoE damage pretty massively. So this fight was, you know, what the heck are you thinking when you need high AoE damage for this fight? And this was definitely the first fight where, you know, I think we kind of started losing interest in the dungeons because, well, I mean, it was a long dungeon. The rewards weren't really that great for it. So I was like, why even bother? This was miserable.
Yeah. I mean, calm down, dog. We're not even at the last boss yet.
Yeah. But it was that fight.
Yeah, this one really hit us hard that first time, man. It was like, oh, what are we doing?
Yeah, definitely the hardest fight in the dungeon. Outside of maybe the hard mode, but...
All right, well, speaking of the last boss, dog, wrap it on up for us. Marcellus.
The final battle. All right, so, first off, right, the boss will shout Fushuro Da in front of him. You can block or dodge this. So, pretty easy. The boss will do a sweeping breath of fire attack that everyone needs to block. Just like a sunspire. You do not want to stand by the dragon wings. If you do, he will just hit you. And if you don't block, you will die. So don't stand by the wings. He doesn't like you standing over there. There will be adds that spawn throughout the fight with that the DPS need to be watchful of. You will have to block, interrupt, and kill them before they overwhelm you. If the tank can handle a few of them, then the tank can taunt them, but don't overwhelm your tank. There is no enrage mechanic, so you can take your time on the boss and focus on the adds. So that's a nice thing about the fight. The dragon will rain AoEs everywhere, so try to avoid them and not stand in them. The dragon will charge towards the tank. Be sure to stay out of the dragon's pack. Block if you're at the tank, or dodge roll away if you're not. And then the boss will curse players like the mechanic. The boss will curse players like the mechanic when you go in between bosses 4 and 5. So you will need to run to the cleanse circle and synergize it. If you don't, you will get stunned and a lurcher will spawn that needs to be killed ASAP. And this only applies for the non-hard mode. So I think just veteran. Maybe on normal, but I don't really know. Because I think on normal, the boss just dies really fast. Because, yeah. Or someone...
Because it's normal.
Yeah, because it's normal. Or people actually know the mechanic. Because they...
Oh, well, let's not get carried away.
I mean, the only people who do Larry Mars Lock on normal are people who actually... are going for something for it. Maybe they're filling up the sticker book, or maybe they're doing the story, but maybe mainly people who are doing the sticker book or getting a lead or something.
That's true. I agree.
All right. So now we have some hard mode mechanics. Like before, Celine will be traveling around and will need to be interrupted. So Crushing Shock is useful again. And the big one is the dragon will call Celine for help. And you can attack her and interrupt her until the damage shield is gone. And then you'll see a seat on the ground that the DPS and healer must synergize. And you need to go to the three pads of the room that are glowing. Pretty much your pad will be glowing. And if all three players go to the same pad, then the tank will need to go cleanse in the cleansing circle. And if you are on the wrong pad, then you will die and a lurcher will spawn. Also, when you die, you'll be encased in roots that need to be destroyed before you can do a revive. So it can be very punishing if you mess up. Which is definitely an interesting mechanic because, you know, just dying in general in a hard mode is messing up. So with that, that'll wrap up the Marslock fight. And you'll, after, you know, an hour or so, you would have gotten, maybe even completed, Lair of Marcelon. So.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's a big maybe.
Yeah. You want to start diving into some of these sets, Bob?
Yeah, let's talk some sets. First off, we've got Zen's Redress, the light set. That's going to give you Magicka recovery, weapon and spell damage, and max Magicka on the way to the 5-piece where your light attacks apply the Touch of Zen on enemies for 20 seconds. Enemies with the Touch of Zen take an additional 1% more damage for each damage over time effect you've placed on them, up to 5%. You can only receive the benefit from one Touch of Zen per enemy. So that's an interesting one. Seems like the overall benefit, like, you know, increase in damage taken 5% if you place 5 dots on it is kind of minimal. But it doesn't seem like too bad. I mean... if you're putting, you know, maybe for trial or something, having the boss take extra damage, always helpful. You know, if someone's already running some other healer set you don't need, could be something you throw on.
Yeah, I think this was one of those sets that was pretty good back then. But now that there are new sets, it's kind of okay. But pretty much if, you know, if you don't have it, you probably don't really want to go farm Lair of Marslock. Especially when it's not, you know, double drops, or if it's the Undaunted event and there's like a curated last drop for you, it's with there from a box. though.
Yeah. No one wants to farm Lair Barslot.
No. Next up, we have a Azure Blight Reaper. This is the medium set. This will give you crit chance, maximum stamina, and stam recovery. And then its fifth item reads, when you deal damage with a damage over time effect, you apply a stack of Blight Seed to your target for 5 seconds. At 20 stacks, the Blight Seed explodes, dealing 1745 disease damage to the target and nearby enemies, scaling off the higher of your weapon or spell damage. An enemy can have one instance of Blight Seed at a time. And an enemy that has reached 20 stacks cannot be infected with Blight Seed for 2 seconds. I feel like this was a set that may have been used, but I don't know, because during that time I was pretty much strictly, you know, Magicka characters only. Pretty much not until like the last, like, you know, 6 months, 9 months, I actually started caring about stamina characters. So I don't really know.
It's just weird to me because didn't Graham grind a set from this dungeon?
Maybe.
Some about Azure Blight? I think it was that one. Yeah, the one that explodes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that he was running that for a while. Maybe on his tank, though, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. I know he did like that set, so he made it work. All right, so let's talk the last set here. Dragon's Defilement, heavy set. We got 2 max staminas and a max health on the way to the 5 item set piece, where it adds 1206 max health, and when you take damage from a melee attack, gain a corrupting aura for 5 seconds that applies minor breach to all enemies within 8 meters of you, reducing both their resistances by 2974. This effect can occur every 5 seconds. So you could keep it 100% uptime if Minor Breach is something that you want to keep 100% uptime up of.
Yeah, that's something that's, you know, decently good for, like, trash mobs, but anything for a boss fight, you just have a puncture, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, Dog, do you want to cover the monster helm?
Yeah, so this monster helm is Marslock. You know, who would have guessed, right?
Not me.
Yeah. So this one will give you about 1100 maximum stamina. And then its second piece is the when you deal damage with a heavy melee attack, you spew a cone of corruption, dealing 1492 disease damage to enemies over 4 seconds. This damage is increased by 10% for each negative effect the enemy have, up to a maximum of 300%. This effect can occur once every 10 seconds and scales off the higher of your weapon or spell damage. So, I mean, it's a monster set. It's an okay monster set. The only thing that I could really see this is, like, maybe like a melee stamina build for trials, or if you're fighting dragons without a bunch of people. But yeah, it's not that great of a monster set. Definitely better options out there.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever one that I was too particularly interested in. All right, so we got some achievements here to finish it off. The Scalebreaker Explorer achievement, which you get, you know, by entering either dungeon, and it gifts you the Dread Aurelion Mask. Have you got a lot of use in from that mask?
No. I don't even know what it looks like. I probably didn't like it, though.
Well, I don't know what it looks like either, so there you go. Then you also have the Stags of Zen style, the motif pages in that dungeon, which, you know, who, once again, no one ever wants to grind those. Just buy them in whatever crown crate you could get them out of. For the love of all that is Tamriel.
Or in the guild store. Like, you know, help the player economy.
Very true. And then we've got the Lair of Marcelot Conqueror. The Lair of Marcelot Conqueror, which is for the veteran completion, which also gives the Corruption of Marcelot Memento. Then we have the Lair of Marcelot Challenger, the No Death Speedrun Hard Mode Individual Achievements, and that gives the title Guardian of the Green. And last but not least, we have Selene's Savior, which I'm assuming is the hard mode?
I think so, yeah.
And it gives the Zen's Redeemer title. So, Dogged, let's wrap up this dungeon, man. What's your favorite part?
Well, I think the first off, right, in those notes, right, I spelled Marslock three different ways in three different times. And only one of them's right, I think.
That takes, you know, a certain level of skill that most people haven't attained.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, my favorite part of the dungeon, well, in my opinion, right, this is the stupidest dungeon in the game. The mechanics are kind of cool, but also really stupid. It's also the longest dungeon in the game. So, you know, and so behind the scenes was that there is some stupid logic for nerfing AoE damage in this patch, while also requiring high AoE damage to be successful in a fight in this dungeon in that same patch. And I don't know. This was like the second time in the year that I was just dumbfounded by some of the changes. The first was during Depths of Malatar, when they wanted healers to be important in dungeons. Then they proceeded to make a debuff that made healers completely useless. And, you know, both instances are like a Gru meme, if you know what that is, because it's just like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if I have a favorite part of this dungeon, man. My favorite part is when it's over.
Yeah. Or nah, leaving the dungeon.
Yeah, right. I mean, in all seriousness, it was a really cool concept when it came out, you know? I think what ended up weighing down the dungeon is all the running that's in between all the fights. And, I mean, you guys know that I've been a proponent a long time of the fact that I think having dungeons like intertwined with the year-long story really weighs them down, and I think that this one was the peak of that problem. But it does have some good things in it. Probably my favorite part, you know, like I went on about earlier, is the fact they brought Selene back and did the whole story for that. I thought that was really cool. Some of the boss fights are cool. I like the concept of the tree boss fight. It just ends up being a really hard and really just like crap is going on everywhere kind of boss fight. And yeah, I would say I dislike more than I like out of this dungeon, though, for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of cool concepts in the dungeon. Just it's just miserable to run the dungeon. Like, it's hard to get people to be like, yay, let's go run this on veteran, because I mean, it's just a lot.
All right, Dogged. So, we got one more thing for this dungeon. Wrap it up.
Alright, so we have some antiquity leads. The main one that you might be looking for is the Dovrah Sabaton Guard from the Dovrah Sabaton Mythic, and you get that from the last boss. The other one that you can get is the Stained Glass of the Lunar Phases, but you can get that from any dragon fight, so that's just one that you might get. So, be sure that if you do get a lead, you get the right one if you're looking for the Dovrah one.
All right, there you go. That's going to wrap up Lair of Marcelot, the first of the two Scalebreaker dungeons. And for us, before we get into the next, we'd like to remind you that we are part of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. It's an amazing place and community for people to find podcasts that they will love. So go check them all out at robotsradio.net.
Hey, Guardians, we are the Destiny Show Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things Destiny 2. We invite amazing guests from the Destiny community to share their stories and discuss the latest topics from the world of Destiny. Check us out on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, or live on Twitch every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will see you, Starside.
All right. So, we got one more dungeon left for everyone. The other infamous dungeon of this set, Moongrave Fane. And Dogged, I gave the information on Marslock, so why don't you tell them about this fantastical dungeon?
All right. Well, you know, it's a DLC dungeon, so you can unlock it on normal at level 45, and its location is southwest of Northern Elsewhere. So, southwestern of Northern Elsewhere.
So, not to be confused with Southern Elsewhere.
Yeah. And then there are some dangerous enemies, two in particular. You have big Khajiit two-handers, and the tank definitely needs to grab these, and the tank definitely needs to grab these hulking Khajiit before they dizzy swing swam one to death, because, well, you know.
They're hulking.
Yeah, and they're big, and they're two-handers, and they like to dizzy swing people to death, particularly dogs.
And you might have PTSD about being dizzy swung to death from, you know, PvP, so you should be careful of that.
Yeah. And there's also Stone Archinox, and I'm not sure what they do, but they do have a lot of health, and they seem to do bad things, so those should probably die, too.
Oh, yeah, the Stompers, right?
Yeah, they do Ground Pound, and I don't know what that does, besides do damage. But the two-handers definitely need to go first.
But I don't like
it. There's dangerous enemies, though. That's it.
I don't like the ground pounders.
And before you go into any bosses, there are some mechanics that we should discuss first. The first one, and I think this is the infamous one about this, is there's block mechanics. And you can either light attack or heavy attack to move the block. The heavy attack pushes it farther. There is a circle, blue, glowy thing on the ground to reset the block if you need to, if you get it stuck or something. And the block will need to be put on large square pressure plates to move through the dungeon.
Yeah, if you've done, like, the main quest, I think, for Elsewhere, or maybe it's Southern Elsewhere, there's, like, blocks in there, too, that you have to, like, block puzzle, move around, so it's similar to that.
Yeah, might even be a prologue quest or something.
Yeah, maybe it was. For sure it's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's your normal little block puzzle. Kind of cool little thing, but definitely, you know, in replayability, it just slows down the dungeon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then there's also Sanguine Sacrifice. And there will be a glowing yellow circle marking on the ground that you will need to synergize. And then you will have to heavy attack this again at certain things. Using this synergy will consume 50% of your total health, so be careful. Make sure you're always at full health. And then there are going to be these little red ghost wraith things called Hemonculuses. They're blood race, and they have a circle shield on them, and you need to heavy attack the blood orb from the synergy to make them killable.
Yeah, those orbs are annoying. They come into play for the first boss, too, a lot, which I'm sure we're going to talk about right now. But, yeah, I mean, too, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you just hit the synergy and just takes your health, and you're like, oh my god. So you gotta be careful.
Yep.
Alright, so let's get into our bosses for this dungeon. The first one is honestly, like, I don't know. I have a couple in this dungeon that I'm like, but this one is, we always have, like, anytime I pug this, especially, like, if it's on veteran, it's, like, guaranteed we're going to have trouble for whatever reason. So, we got the Risen Ruins, which is a huge stone Atronach. And it's going to do all kinds of crazy stuff. Before you start the fight, you should pre-synergize both of the orbs, because as I was saying, they're going to come into play in this fight. So it's nice to have them up already before you start the fight. Now, you're going to be able to damage him for a little while, and then the boss will gold bar and do a lot of damage by throwing rocks, like a stone shaper from Ruins of Mazatun, you know what I'm saying? Now, you'll need to quickly heavy attack two blood orbs into the boss to make him stop. You're getting why it's nice to have them up. So, the adds that you're going to spawn, you know, the tank needs to taunt them, hopefully, because after the phase is over, you're going to have to burn them down and heal up and use the synergies again well at full health for the next time. Bonus, if you have a really good healer and tanky DPS, then you can try to heal through this. There's an achievement called Bloodless Kill if you complete the boss without activating the synergy. That sounds extremely tough in my opinion, but hey man, I'm sure people have gotten it.
Yeah, it's probably something that Lotus has gotten.
Sounds like it. So the tank should angle the boss to the wall, like, you know, behind where he spawns. The boss will do a line charge attack that needs to be avoided. So you gotta be careful with that. And he can also randomly de-aggro himself when he does the line charge. So always be aware of that. As a tank, this guy moves a lot, so you just need to watch your taunt. Now, lastly, the Atronach will smash the ground and do damage, primarily to the tank. So really, as a DPS, you really just need to be focusing on damage and adds and, you know, making sure that the orbs are up and you shoot them off into the boss in the right direction. With a well, you know, organized group that knows this fight, it's super easy. But, like, as just, like, a bunch of random people who have no coordination, yeah, that is a first boss fight. It could be tough. Reminiscent to the difficulty of, like, Scalecaller Peak's first boss, you know, the two ogres, because it's just, like, for a first boss fight, it could really just, like, break a pug group.
Yeah, I think the two big problems with this fight in particular is the first one being the blood orbs. People don't know that you need to heavy attack it into the boss. And the second one is that sometimes it just randomly decides, all right, I'm just going to dip out of this fight now. For no reason. It just, like, goes in a straight line out. Like, it makes no sense.
Haven't we had it reset on us a couple times, too? Because it, like, jumps around. Yeah,
that's what I was talking about. It just, like, dips out. It's like, nope, I'm done.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And as far as I could tell, there's, like, no mechanic. It's not like, oh, you took too long. It was like, nah, I'm just out. Like, I'm done. I don't get enough for this.
Yeah. That's what everyone is hoping for, you know? That's like the biggest bummer. Especially when you've been fighting it for a while. You're like, no.
Yeah.
All right, dog. Take away for the second boss.
All right. So for the next boss is Drozakar. For this boss, there will be the same yellow sanguine sacrifice circles, but this time you don't want to activate them. There will be adds that will run up to the yellow circles, activate them, and die. And then you will need to heavy attack the orbs as they happen. The boss will try to absorb the blood from the orb to empower himself, and you do not want that to happen. He enrages and does super crazy things, so you don't want that to happen. The boss will get a shield at 90, 60, and 30%. He will hold his battle axe in the air and start hitting everyone with a lot of damage. The boss will keep doing this until you do enough damage to burn through this shield. And be sure to save your ultimates for these percentages. The damage also hits harder and harder, so this is a DPS test. And then lastly, this boss will turn into a blood pool and chase a player. Don't stay in the blood pool because I think it heals the boss a little bit and does a lot of damage. So, but other than that, this is a easier fight compared to the last one, as long as you have the DPS for it.
And that will bring us to the third boss, Kujo Kethba, which is a gargoyle. This boss will gold bar at 90, 70, 50, and 30%, or every 30 seconds. So, you know. And any attacks on the boss will deflect back at you while it's gold barred. So you gotta be really careful about that. Now, to end this phase, the gold bar phase, you need to use the block mechanics to have the blocks go over different lava geysers spewing out of the ground. And I'm talking like the big old blocks, pushing them around. Those are out there. You got two of them. There's going to be lava spewing up in different areas. Sometimes, like, for me, the hardest part is, like, finding where the lava is because there's so much going on, especially when it's on veteran because you're, like, trying to stay alive. But you just got, like, you just gotta calm down, spin around real quick, find your spot, go do the lava. You know, especially when you the DPS, because that's probably gonna be your job. You know, the tank's gonna be doing his thing, making sure he's gonna be ready to, you know, keep aggro of the boss, the healer's gonna be healing, etc. So yeah, you got those blocks. Once you cover both geysers up, he will come out of the gold bar phase. Now, he also spawns in adds, so that can make targeting the blocks a bit harder, too.
Yeah, this mechanic is, you know, kind of fun and normal. Kind of fun the first time. But it can be a nightmare on veteran, because block physics, while under press... this mechanic is fun on normal. It can be a nightmare on veteran, because block physics, while under pressure, is stressful. So that's a thing. And normal physics is also stressful too. So,
yeah, especially for like pug groups and stuff. I mean, the blocks don't always go exactly where you're wanting to, which can be kind of frustrating. And like, you got a light attack, light attack, light attack. I don't know. I mean, like you said, when you do it the first time, you're like, oh, wow, that's cool. But, you know, for replayability, again, the blocks, they just kind of complicate things.
Yeah, especially when, they'll be, like, kind of over the lava, but not, but the center of the block isn't over the lava, so it doesn't count. So.
That's the worst, especially when you think you got it, and you turn around and start, like, waiting to go do damage, and you're like, oh, my block didn't clear it.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's happened to me plenty of times.
Yep. Block physics.
Block physics for the win.
Alright, next up we have Grunwolf and Nezazda. The tank will need to taunt Grunwolf primarily and try to stack him with Nezazda when possible. And then you will also need to pull aggro of a gargoyle if one gets spawned in. The DPS need to make sure that the yellow sanguine circle always has a blood ward up and focus on burning the mage boss. Nezazda will put her staff in the air and shoot out blood. This needs to be bashed. She can also teleport around, so having Crushing Shock will be helpful for that. And she does another channeling ability, but this one will need to be interrupted by heavy attacking the blood orb at her. So that's why you need it up. Hemonculuses will also spawn, and they will need to take a hit from the blood orb before they can be killed too. So another reason why you need that up too. And then lastly, Grunwolf will throw a blood circle on the ground that will do massive damage if you're in it, and will also enrage the boss, so it's important to keep him out of there. So a lot of mechanics on that fight, but I still think that's one of the easier ones. I'd say it's about mid.
Yeah, you just gotta make sure, like, you have good coordination and focusing down. You know, I think it's Nasazda, right? The mage.
Yeah.
And being able to interrupt from distance, for sure, is, like, a huge thing for that fight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that one, not too bad. And then, of course, you think you're done, and here goes your boy, Grundwolf, just jumping up in the air and out into his dragon pit where he's been, you know, sucking the blood magic out of this dragon. I don't know. Things get weird down in the Grundwolf dungeons. What can I say?
That is weird.
Well, there you go. That's what he's doing down there, okay? He's got a dragon captured, so you gotta fight him after he's, like, buffed up on his, you know, dragon powers. And he's gonna do a lot of AoE damage, so you gotta be sure to face him away from the group as the tank. And when he does his, Boost Roda, similar to, you know, Mar Solok. And, well, when he does that, you will need to not stand in the AoE or block it. Just get the heck out of there. So, the dragon will have fire AoEs rain down, because he's mad. So, please don't stand in his fire as well. It's a good advice tip right there.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
You could say so.
Yeah.
Now, the boss will hide behind, like, a cubes in the, you know, out there from time to time, trying to build up his energy. So, if you heavy attack the cube out of the way, then he will get hit by the dragon's, you know, fiery blitzkrieg of death. And you want that. It does hurt him. It's a good thing. Now, the last thing is that there are blood pillars that will spawn and drain you. You need to stand on top of them, and they will eventually go away. And DPS, you gotta be paying attention out there. You can't be like me when I'm DPSing, just not caring at all, and then Dog's like, there's a freaking pillar! Everyone's dying! Graham's like, oh, there's a pillar! Guys, come on! And I'm like, oh... What game were we playing? I'm just kidding.
I actually learned what you're supposed to do with that blood pillar, so I did not know you're supposed to stand in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I would have been attacking it at best.
I always tried to throw the blood orb into it, but nope.
Oh, that's right. I do remember us doing that, actually.
Yeah. And then I'd be confused on why it didn't go away. So, but the more you know.
Yeah, the more you know. This one was definitely a tough one. So, do you want to talk about the hard mode mechanics?
Sure, I can do that. All right, the first one is that Hemonculuses will spawn, and they will need to take a hit from a blood orb before they can be killed. The synergy will spawn a Horber that puts a nasty dot on you, and the Horber needs to be killed right away. And there will also be a bat that will also spawn, and someone will have a marker on their feet, and you will need to kite it around until someone hits a blood orb at it and kills it. If the bat touches the kiter, and then they will die. So you have to be moving around. And then the boss has two specific heavy attacks, a short and a long one. The tank can take the hit from the short one, but you need to dodge roll the longer heavy attack Grundwolf does. And that one's a bit harder to differentiate from. But those are the only hard mode mechanics. Pretty much just the additional heavy attack it has, as well as the whole synergy Horror Bat thing. Oh, and it hits harder, too, because why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, why not, exactly? I don't think we ever quite made it through this hard mode with our group.
I don't think so.
Honestly, like, veteran, I think that's enough for me on this dungeon.
Yeah, block physics was the pain, and I don't like block physics, so.
Yeah, well.
Just always felt off on console. Maybe it's a console thing, or maybe it's block physics just being dumb.
Yeah. Who knows? I guess we'll never find out. Alright, so let's talk about some sets. First off, we have Hall of Fame Thirst. I mean, do you want to take it since it's the healer set?
I guess. So you get crit chance, maximum magicka, more crit chance, and then its fifth item reads, whenever you critically heal or critically damage a target, you spawn a ball of hemoglobin at their location. After 2 seconds, the ball explodes, restoring 1750 magicka and applying minor vitality to you and your group members within 6 meters of the ball for 9 seconds, increasing their healing received by 8%. And this effect can occur once every 9 seconds. So this gives you magicka back and applies the minor vitality buff every 9 seconds. So pretty good.
Yeah. Something you definitely see a lot of healers run. The little ball of hemoglobin pops up a friendly AoE on the ground that grows, and you have to be inside of it to get the boon. So, very common thing, very popular set. And the rings were in the golden last weekend. Did you get some, dog? Because I did.
I did not. I didn't even think about checking the golden. I haven't been checking the golden for a while.
I usually check it because you told me that's where you get all your shoulders. So I've been trying to fill out my lists when they come through.
Yeah, very smart. I think my favorite thing about this set is that seeing it in the overworld and not getting magicka or minor vitality or being healed by it, because it does nothing for non-group members, because that's a stupid mechanic.
Wow. That is really sucky. I didn't know that that's how that worked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It specifically says group members.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good tease.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of sets that, like, you shouldn't be able to see the mechanics going off if it doesn't affect you.
Yeah. Like the Aegis one from.
Exactly.
I shouldn't see somebody's healing one either.
Yeah, I worked hard to get that set so I could be dropping air atronachs for everyone to see and just spinning around. So cool, but no one sees it at all. Which I think is so surprising that, like, out of all the sets that other people do see, they don't see that one.
Yeah,
because, like, you would think that would almost count as a pet, right? Because a Storm Atronach does for his Sork.
Yeah, but you can synergize that.
Yeah, I guess. Fair enough. All right, so that's the healing set. It's a great one. Go in there and farm for that one for sure. And make sure when you do get this one on randoms, you know, you're going for all the Hall of Fame pieces and binding them all. Make sure you keep them and fill up that sticker book. Because you don't have to farm this one as little as possible, for sure. Now, Drozgar's Claw is the medium set. We've got Offensive Penetration, Crit Chance, and Stam Recovery on the way to the 5-piece, which adds 129 weapon and spell damage for every bleed effect you have on an enemy, and it increases your weapon and spell damage by 103 against them. Okay, and so, yeah. Oh, wait. Which adds 129 weapon and spell damage overall. And for every bleed effect you have on an enemy, it also increases your weapon and spell damage by 103 against that enemy. So if you have, like, you know, 5 bleeds on them, then that's an extra 500 weapon and spell damage, which is pretty freaking cool. But honestly, I don't think I see this set run too much. Yeah. I've definitely never gone in there and farmed for that one.
Yeah, not unless if you're running like double axes or something.
Oh yeah, for the bleed, the axes.
Yeah. The next set is Renault's Resolve, the heavy armor set. This one will give you max health, 4% healing taken, more max health, and then its fifth item reads, when you deal direct damage, gain the Stagger Resolve for 5 seconds. Each stack increases your healing taken by 1%, and your physical and spell resistance by 420. This effect can occur once every half second and stack up to 9 times. So you can get 9% healing taken and like 3,700 physical and spell resistance. This is a okay set. It's not the greatest. There's definitely better ones out there, but you know, it's okay.
All right, so that's going to bring us to the monster set, which is appropriately called Grendwolf. No surprise there. And this one for the one piece adds 657 crit chance. And for the two piece, whenever you deal critical damage, you restore 700 magicka or stamina, whichever maximum is higher. You also gain 350 of the other resource. This effect can occur once every 5 seconds. So, I don't know. I mean, kind of cool.
Yeah, I think the cooldown's a bit long for my taste. I think, like, maybe every second or every 2 seconds at the max would be good enough. But for every 5 seconds, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, the cooldown is a little long. Especially when you say whenever you deal critical damage. Like, I deal a lot of critical damage within 5 seconds.
Yeah.
All right, so I think it's passed for me on the monster set. And honestly, I think the only set I've ever really liked from here is Hall of Fang. And I'll probably keep it that way. Because I don't want to have to go back and farm anything else from there.
Yeah. That's the same as for me as well.
So, why don't you lay down some achievements for us there, dog?
Alright, well, the first one is the Moongrave Style Master, and this is the motif pages that you get from the dungeon. You also have Moongrave Fane Conqueror, which is the veteran completion, and this will give you the Undaunted Porter Scamp pet. You also have Moongrave Fane Challenger, which is the No Death Speedrun Hard Mode individual achievements all together. You have Moongrave Fane Challenger, which is completing the No Death Speedrun and Hard Mode individual achievements. And that'll give you the Chevalier title. You have the Drunk on Power achievement, which is completing the Moongrave Fane Hard Mode. This will give you the Hollow Fang Exsanguinator title. But then for completing both, you get Scalebreaker Scout, which is completing them both on normal. And you get the Behold Kunzari's Guile Furnishing and Skillbreaker Delver, which is cleaning them both on veteran. And you get the Hollow Fang Cruor, which is like a dark red color. Which is, I would probably say it's like a blood red. Which is a very nice red. I like that red.
Man, I gotta say, I have a tough time even remembering that one. But to be fair, I'm so in love with the Emperor's Red that I have a hard time. The Ruby Throne Red, like, I don't look really at any of the reds. So, I don't know. There definitely was a point, though, where that was my favorite thing in the dungeons, was unlocking the dyes. So, I'm sure I did. I feel like, isn't this one kind of, like, orange?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, maybe it's on some stuff, but I've only ever seen it as like a dark red, blood red.
I mean, that's definitely a good color to have. It goes with a lot of the armors very well. The, you know, just red, especially a good dark red.
Yeah.
All right, dog. So we've come a long way. We walked through the entire lair of Mar Salok, and we, you know, went through the all the magical block physics of Moongrave Fan. So in that case, there's only one thing left to do, and that's to say what your favorite part of the dungeon was.
The block physics was, like, I think it was cool the first couple of times. So that was definitely a neat concept. As far as, you know, doing the dungeon multiple times goes, it ends up being something that I don't really like. But I think my favorite part of the dungeon is just getting the veteran completion so I can get that die. Because I do like that die. What about you, Bob? What is your favorite part of the dungeon?
I don't know. I guess it's my least favorite and favorite part is the block mechanics. Like, it's interesting. I liked that this dungeon was, doesn't feel as long and drawn out as Marslock, even though they still incorporated story into it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I don't mind getting this one as part of my random dungeons, whereas Lair of Marslock is like, I guess I'm not doing my random dungeons for the next like 15, 20 minutes. Alright, and then wrapping up with this dungeon, we have one antiquity lead. It is the Dovra Sabaton Polyanth part, which is, you know, the mythic item. And you get this by defeating trash mobs in Moongrave Fane. So I think theoretically you should just be able to kill like the first group of trash mobs up until that first boss if you just need to try and go for the lead. So, but that's the only antiquity lead you get from this dungeon. And, but with that, that finishes up the Moongrave Fane dungeon and the dungeon DLC.
There you go. Perfect way to wrap it up with all those great info. All that great info on some of the tougher dungeons to get through, especially on veteran. On normal, they're not too bad. Especially, you know, good communication. You could just plow through them. So, Dogged, why don't you tell people where they can find us when we're not here in front of this microphone?
All right, you can find us on Twitter of the @RedDiamondCast. You can find us on our Facebook of the Red Diamond Courier. You can find us in our ESO PC or Xbox guild of Airs the Red Diamond, which you can join on the Robots Radio Discord on our robotsradio.net.
And if you check the show notes, you'll find links to all our awesome stuff. And if you give us a 5-star review with some words on Apple Podcasts, we will shout it to all the stars and Nine Divine of Tamriel. Dogged, what about your links, my man?
You can find me on Xbox, Twitter, and ESOPC, all at DogBar24.
And you can find me on Twitter, Twitch, ESO, PC, or Xbox at Bob_Chichinsky. Except on Xbox, there's no underscore. So, as always, it was good hanging out with you all. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Maybe learn a little bit more about these dungeons. And we will see you on the flip side. Hope to see some of you all in Vegas.
Yep, see ya.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Looking for a Fallout audio drama? It's True Vault Escapades! That's right, follow the death-defying adventures of Detective Walter Camry and his vault girl Bunny as they solve the wasteland's biggest mysteries. From the dramatic Texas prologue to the high-stakes world of New Vegas, Walter and Bunny risk it all to crack everything from murders, slaver syndicates, and corruption at the highest level in post-nuclear America. True Vault Escapades. It's a Fallout show with a detective twist. Look for True Vault Escapades wherever you get your podcasts.